today. I think that the last time we had KLM here at the club back in 2017, that's right, and a gentleman called John Slattery, the then CEO who left to join GE. I think at that event we had a question from the Wall Street Journal, and the journalist had heard, had a tip-off about a meeting in Amsterdam, whereby you overheard Lord about to launch a turbot book. That relationship obviously was a big part of what the Boeing, I think, was trying to achieve at the time with Boeing. So I certainly hope today's interview will be as enlightening. But firstly, Ari, on a personal note, I think there's a huge and significant contrast, which you might appear to be aware of, between the days at the KLM as general manager of engineering in Norwich, and then at KLM at Cityhopper as VP Technical. That, you think you took the reins during the pandemic, just into it. You must have both seen quite a lot of very tumultuous times. So I would just be keen to understand, you know, what were the highlights perhaps of that experience, and perhaps what were some of the biggest challenges as well that you faced?
Yeah, no, thank you. I worked at that time for 4 years for Embraer, so I had to make the move from KLM before that, right? So I didn't step straight into this role. I did the European region before and was chief commercial for a couple of years. Took the role in April 2020, I think, in the utter darkness of the industry when COVID started, right? So the JV with Boeing had just failed. We had literally carved out commercial aviation into a separate company, so it was an interesting time. But I think ever since, we've managed very well. I think the regional market was the first to catch up coming out of the crisis, and I think fast forward now today, I think we're in a very good position. But lots of challenges on the way, but very great position to work in.
I understand from the press this week you've just been awarded $150 million in arbitration from Boeing, and their decision to walk away from the proposed $4.5 billion tie-up. I realise it's a challenging question and probably one that you're not able to dig into too deeply, but from a personal, you know, experience, what is the kind of true and the wider implications of that challenge?
Yeah, let me first say when I started the role, it was early 2020. We're now day 24, right? So we're 4.5 years down the road, and finally this arbitration behind us. It was about time. I think it's good that it's been concluded. But to be fair, this has happened in the sideline. It's been a big legal discussion. Some colleagues have participated in it, but over time, we've been really focusing on bringing Embraer Commercial Aviation back into the company. We did that immediately in 2020. We were very clear to the market that Embraer was no longer in the shop window, right? We were not for sale, we were going back into one company. And let's not forget, when it all happened, when we were planning to go with Boeing, it was pre-crisis. Post-crisis, a lot has happened. And I think when you now look at the portfolio of Embraer with executive aviation, with defense, with commercial aviation, and our service and support strength, we're in a very strong position. So I think we're in a very good place now compared to when the deal failed. But I'm very glad it's now really behind us. It's something we never really talked about. It's also something I won't talk about with the deals here, but I'm glad it's happened.
Okay, super. The regional market itself, I think, has been really quite selective to recover, you know, post-COVID-19. Boeing, unsurprisingly, perhaps remains kind of sceptical that market will ever recover back to its former state. You know, Embraer has, you know, really low competition when I left in the sector, post, you know, after the Bombardier shift. So, you know, however, I think your shipments perhaps are still not at the same rate they were pre-COVID. I think you delivered 89 aircraft in 2019, and subsequently, I don't think that number has now risen back to above 60. I think Syria will currently project 68 aircraft deliveries this coming year. So we are seeing that reduced volume. I think Airbus, conversely, their deliveries, I think, are about to hit about 75 aircraft per month eventually. So how does Embraer feel about competing with Airbus and Boeing in that sector? And does Embraer perhaps have the commercial armoury and the scale to perhaps, you know, move fully into that mainline market?
Yeah, well, in terms of size, we're a completely different company than Airbus and Boeing. Right? We were that before the crisis, and we are still today. I would not agree that we are not at decent output levels. If we look at the demand side of the business and the recovery of the regional jet market,
demand is there. But we're very focused at Limerick to make sure that what we promise we can actually deliver. That's really tough enough nowadays. So we try to have good contacts with our suppliers and make sure that we have an outlook that we can actually build and deliver. And don't forget, if you go from 100-ish aircraft before the crisis to 50 in the crisis, that's only a 50% drop. But you need to grow back 100% to get back to your old level. So we're growing high double-digit numbers year over year. We're putting the stress on the supply chain. Not only us, but everyone's putting the stress on the supply chain. So we have given a guidance between 72 and 80 aircraft for this year.
Okay.
Last year we did 64. So if you're looking at decent, on our base level of production, you're looking at decent plans. And we actually cannot build what we have in our demand line at the moment. So, I think we're positively looking forward, but I'm actually looking for the supply chain to catch up so we can start building more aircraft.
Yeah, well, indeed. I mean, what are the repercussions? I think of, you know, so many aircraft being grounded at the moment with the Pratt & Whitney GTF engine. I mean, it's burnt, I think, a $7 billion hole in RTX's forecast. I think what they'd hoped was a 60-day per engine project is now something like 300 days of approximately per engine. I mean, how far has that affected production targets? I think we listened to an interview with the CEO of American Airlines at an investment conference recently. He applauded you for resilience and your ability to deliver. So how are you weathering that particular storm so successfully?
Yeah, a few things about that. Of course, there's a challenge supply chain, and Pratt & Whitney is one of them. But what I will say is we have an extremely good relationship with them. And we base our lines with them on three points. One is the production engines for us. The other one is making parts for the overhauls. And the third one is the spares to support the fleet. They're all based on the same material flow, the same people. So that's the balance.
Shall I do it? I'm useless, I'll try.
I think we do that in very close cooperation. And that's what I'm saying. We would love to build more, but I know if we build too many, we're going to start some of the other people. But that's kind of the balance that we're trying to fix. When you look at the issues that we see on E2, GTF is a three-letter code that everyone knows, but the GTF flies on A320, the A220, and on E2, it was supposed to fly the MRJ. The E2 was the third platform to market. It's the lightest platform, it's got the lowest number of engines flying out there with issues that need to be fixed. So relatively, if you look at GTF performance on E2, it's actually doing very well compared to the others.